We'll go ahead and get started with the November 6th, 2018 work session for the Springfield Planning Commission. And first of all, I guess we'll take roll. Commissioner Landon, present. Commissioner Gill.
Here.
Commissioner Sherwood.
Present.
Commission Chairman Coigula is present. Commissioner Bose.
Present.
And absent, we have Commissioner...
Bergen and McGinley, and they're excused.
Okay. Okay, we have one item, or actually two items on our agenda, which I am going to pull up here. The first is work session item for Oregon statewide planning goals, led by Mark Rusk, our senior planner, to take place for 60 minutes.
Great.
Go ahead, Mark.
Thank you. So I am Mark Rust. I've been attending before. Thanks for having me come talk to you tonight. And if you saw in your packets, I recommended and requested that if you were willing and had time to do some homework of your own on any of the goals, and I'll ask you about that in a little more detail in a minute, but I'll just give a brief introduction here to the Oregon statewide planning goals. This is going to be a pretty high-level review. There's quite a bit of information to cover, and diving into too much detail would eat up the hour on any one goal pretty quick. You could probably spend an hour on each of the goals. But a lot of the materials I'm going to be referencing tonight came directly from the state website, so I'll just get right into it. So the 19 goals of the statewide planning program are the foundation of the statewide land use planning program. It's pretty unique nationally. Oregon is often looked at as a model for statewide planning. The goals that are express the state's policies on land use related topics, and as you are aware, I'm sure they're quite varied and cover a wide array of different subjects. Many of the goals are also include are accompanied by guidelines. Those are typically just suggestions, so they're not actual requirements. The goals are implemented through a local jurisdiction's comprehensive plan, which the city of Springfield has, and I'll talk a little bit about that. And then the comprehensive plan is implemented through our implementing ordinances, such as our development code, zoning ordinances, land division ordinance, those types of things. LCDC is the body, Land Conservation Development Commission acknowledges the comprehensive plans. So I have a few dates that I'll touch on in a minute about Springfield's comprehensive plan. The original goals adopted by the state were back in 1974. There were originally only 14 of them. Subsequent to that, the 15th goal, which I know one of the commissioners did some work on tonight, on the Willamette River Greenway, was adopted about a year later in 1975. And then the last four goals, 16 through 19, are the four coastal goals, were adopted another year after that in 1976. So here's a quick list of the 19 goals. Lane County is the only county in Oregon that all 19 goals apply to. And that's primarily due to one, the Willamette River goal, and also the coastal goals. So Wayne County is the only county that has both of those elements applicable to it. So just out of curiosity, how many of the planning commissioners did do research on some of the goals? And you did goal 14. What other goals?
15,
sorry. Yeah. Which goal?
I did goal 1.
Goal 1?
9.
9. None. And Commissioner Bose?
I'm basically prepared to, since I have this document that I brought, in conjunction with the ones that are already here, I'm prepared to address any one of them that is either left over or anything.
And that's not required. And my presentation isn't really formal, so we can have more of a discussion. The first one I did want to just mention, out of the list of 19, Only 13 of them are actually directly applicable to the city of Springfield. The four coastal goals obviously aren't applicable to Springfield directly. And I also crossed off goals 3 and 4, which are two of the resource zone goals, the agricultural lands and the forest lands. Those can come into play for the city of Springfield. And when we looked at our UGB expansion as an example, where the city may evaluate expanding the UGB in the future, we would have to take into consideration goals 3 and 4 for the city beyond the ag land. Mostly, I think, surrounding Springfield, maybe some forest land. But in terms of what's in the UGB now and our comprehensive plan, we don't have to implement goals 3 and 4. So really, it just boils down to 13 goals. So the goals themselves are administrative rules. OARs, the Oregon Administrative Rules, are, they implement statutes. So administrative rules themselves aren't law. They implement the law. So the laws that actually enable the rules to be created are in statute. I've referenced a couple of statutes here. This 197.175 is Oregon revised statute number. I'm just going to read a little bit. I've summarized some of what it says, but it basically says cities shall exercise their planning and zoning responsibilities. We're required to prepare, adopt, and amend and revise comprehensive plans in compliance with the goal. Also required to enact land use regulations to implement those comprehensive plans. So that's what I talked about a minute ago, how the series of events happen. The original comprehensive plan that covered the city of Springfield was the Metro Plan that was originally adopted back in 1972. So prior to even the land use goals being in place. That plan was amended and revised, updated in 1980. And again, this is a regional plan at that point. The Metro Plan covers both Eugenia and Springfield and some of the surrounding rural areas. Through the mid-80s, there weren't identical plans adopted by the jurisdictions. And at that point, primarily Eugene and Springfield had one, and then Lane County had adopted a slightly different one. So it took a number of years to actually resolve and come up with an identical plan that all three jurisdictions adopted for the metro area. And that was, I think, finally done in 1985. So some of you may be aware and have heard about is Springfield is working on adopting their own comprehensive plan just applicable to the city of Springfield. So pulling pieces of the metro plan out and having comprehensive plan elements that only apply to the city of Springfield. The UGB for the area, for the metro area, used to be a joint UGB with city of Eugene and city of Springfield. We now have our own separate urban growth boundary and now are working on slowly adopting our own elements of the comprehensive plan. The metro plan still is and will likely continue to be for the foreseeable future applicable in a lot of respects. One quick example is the Metro Wastewater System is an infrastructure plan that is regional in nature. Another revised statute I just wanted to touch on. Oftentimes people will reference, say, goal one, it's the citizen involvement goal. It's, you know, the first goal that we put in place is the highest priority. There is actually statutory language that talks about giving equal weight to all the goals, that they're not really prioritized in any manner. The goals aren't directly applicable in most land use decisions. In a case where we're amending our comp plan or the urban growth boundary, that's when the goals actually come into play to be directly applicable. So that's kind of an important point to keep in mind. So goal one, citizen involvement. This is the language of the goal. Some of them are pretty short and brief. Others are a little more wordy. I've given you all a booklet tonight. Many of you may have already seen these. So throughout, these provide a synopsis of each goal and then some of those guidelines that I mentioned that are suggested. And then some of the more rule language behind implementing the goals. So I don't know, Commissioner Gill, if you want to go into what you found on goal one. I'm happy to let you talk about what you explored.
Well, it was a pretty It's a pretty simple, straightforward one. It had pretty clear components. I actually chose this one because I think it's really important. I also work for a government agency that has citizen involvement rules as well, and I understand how great it can be, how hard it can be to do the outreach to the public and get them to participate and have them understand the importance of what these decisions and these goals and the codes and everything, how much they impact their lives. So that was kind of why I picked this one. I think it's really important. One of the biggest components I think is important is communication, but it's two-way. So there's a way, a lot of people, when they think of citizen involvement, they think of citizens just get to give comment. But there's actually the getting a response, which I think is a very important piece of this, and sometimes the harder one to do, depending on how you're gathering the information. So I think that would be an interesting one to think about a little bit more. And the involvement in all phases, I think, is the challenging one. You have to have time to work out and get ideas and think of stuff. And so to figure out how to fairly involve citizens through all phases, I think, is a big technical challenge and outreach challenge that feeds into the sixth one, which is funding all of this and making it happen. I think that those are important considerations. And then the technical information, making everything understandable for people. I think sometimes the technical information can become super technical, and we don't always do a great job of describing what the impacts of the thing are. So here's what it is and here's what it does, but what does this mean for in the city, for what it does in the city? So I think that there are some good guidelines for it, but actual implementation is super challenging in this.
I would say that's true for about all the goals. They're all very challenging. You know, the goals are a very high level, I'll say even like 80,000 foot level. And down from that is a comprehensive plan, policies at the local level. Those are even 40,000 square foot. Then the implementation of that, getting closer to the ground, is the zoning ordinance and those types of things. I think it's interesting how you mentioned the challenge of doing the outreach, but trying to get people involved at the early stages. To me, planning is the high level stuff. You're thinking ahead and looking out. Oftentimes people don't realize what that's gonna mean to them until a development lands next door to them. And then at that point it's written in zoning code and we have to play by the rules that are adopted. So it is a challenge for sure. I'll speak from experience. You know, I just half jokingly sometimes say it's like pulling teeth to try and get people to be involved. And oftentimes there's burnout with the regular people that try to be involved. And there's just so much that goes on. And the technical nature of it, like you mentioned, can be a hurdle, I think, for people.
Or even be perceived as a hurdle. Right. I think a lot of people feel like they have to be experts to contribute, and experts in whatever, and they might not even know in what, but they live here and they experience this place, so kind of giving the message out that you can participate and learn as you're doing it and still give input because you care about what your community's like. So.
Yeah. That's good. I'm gonna have to race through a little bit of this, but definitely open to conversation and questions. Another component of goal one, as most of you know, is a requirement to have a citizen involvement, a committee for citizen involvement. This body acts as that for the city of Springfield. They're the Planning Commission, and they're also our committee for citizen involvement. I'll be coming to you what I'm discussing with you later tonight about the code update project and you acting as a committee for citizen involvement on some of the issues from our community engagement advisory committees and things like that. So we, as the city, use this body for that outreach. So the more people you can interact with and talk to in the community, encourage engagement, or convey the message that you hear as part of the role, I see as this body functions as well under this goal. Goal two is, in my mind, a pretty general goal. We don't use it a whole lot in kind of a day-to-day sense. The land use planning goal, you can read the language there. The one thing I would say, you know, that stands out to me, it talks about having a factual base. That is a really big, important aspect from a planning, you know, land use perspective in that, you know, these goals are 30 plus years old. There's 30 plus years of case law that has been generated based on all of these plans and policies and goals. It's become very technical and legalistic, but having that factual base that you can rely on and point to for making decisions is an important piece. There's, you know, I could go on and talk a lot more about, there's an exception process, there's ways to take exceptions to these goals in certain situations. The city doesn't get involved with that too often, but even the city themselves, if we're looking to do something that maybe don't align perfectly with some of the goals, there's exceptions that can be taken from these goals. Goals three and four I mentioned are the two of the main resource goals. I was a planner with Lane County here in the area for 7.5 years before I came to the city of Springfield, so I'm well aware of the resource goals. That's what county planning deals a lot with, the farm and forest lands. In my mind, a lot of the reason the Oregon Planning Program was set up to begin with is actually to protect the resource lands. Those are huge still to this day, huge economic drivers for the state, for ag and forest lands. It's gone down considerably from what they were in the 70s when the rules were first thought of, but it's still important to protect those lands. And again, back to kind of how it relates to the city is for UGB expansions. The city recently expanded UGB up north of Gateway there for employment lands. That was primarily farmlands up there, it was on DFU at the time. So we brought some farmland into our urban growth boundary. At that time, we would have had to make findings and demonstrate to the state that that was the best option. Goal five. Did one of you say you looked at goal five or no? Goal five is a big one. In my mind, it's natural resource protection. It covers quite a wide variety of different resources. It's another resource zone or a resource goal. I'm going to just run down a list here really quick of what the goal talks about. There's a dozen different things it's intended to help protect. It includes riparian corridors, including fish habitat, wetlands, wildlife habitat, federal wild and scenic rivers, state scenic waterways, groundwater resources, approved Oregon recreational trails, natural areas, wilderness areas, mineral and aggregate resource, energy sources, and cultural areas. That's pretty wide breadth of different types of resources. The city is required to inventory those resources. One of the big ones that comes into play a lot, and I know it's applicable to the city of Springfield, is the mineral and aggregate resources. We have some active mines, quarries, or surface mines in the city. So those are protected resources. We need gravel to use it to build our roads and our houses and other buildings. So the aggregate resource is a very proximity-driven type of resource. It's not easy to haul long distances or affordability or the economics of hauling them long distance doesn't always make a lot of sense. I think any of us driving up in that I-5, you can pick out the old quarries that they used when they built I-5 in the 50s. And when they built the overpasses, they found a hill nearby and took some gravel out of it and used it to build some of the roads. The other thing I'll just mention too quickly under Goal 5, you may have heard the term ESEE or easy analysis. The ESEE stands for, it's an acronym, the E is energy, then social, economic, and environmental. So that's the ESEE analysis that is typically required under Goal 5. So you do an analysis. So say, you know, we wanted to impact some wetlands or something to build a new road, you would have to do this easy analysis and make findings under those standards to say, what's the best option? Should you go right through the wetland or build around it or those types of things? Just a quick example.
Sorry, can I jump in on the Goal 5 thing? We also have the historic here. We have a historic commission, and
that's right.
So we address
that's a good point.
Goal 5.
But it says shall under a number of items, and it said are encouraged to maintain under historical open spaces and scenic views and sites. So that's apparently a lesser standard under those.
We're not required to do
not
it.
Not required.
That's right.
Okay.
But if we do it, there are rules we have to follow, and we are doing it.
And we are encouraged to do it.
All right.
Perhaps.
Yeah, there were three things that are encouraged: the historic resources, open space, and then scenic views. I worked for years in Central Oregon, in the city of Bend, and people always complained that they didn't want somebody to build a house next door to them because it was going to block them out. Well, the city of Bend doesn't protect scenic views for people, and that would get pretty cumbersome. You can probably imagine how tough that might be. But if there are certain things, versus like the city of Prineville actually protects its rim rock, the whole ring there, they actually do protect that rim. So Goal 6 is another one I'm not going to dive too deep into. There are a couple that I really want to talk about tonight that I don't want to run out of time. So Goal 6, air, water, and land resources. It includes solid waste, water waste, noise, thermal pollution. These primarily are, for the most part, dealt with at a federal law and state law level. Oftentimes, they are duplicated by the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act at the federal level. Also at the state level, the Department of Environmental Quality, through its permitting processes, will deal with a lot of these things. Locally, we have LRAPA to deal with air quality. And then also the state Department of Land Conservation Development is another agency that deals some with this goal. Goal 7 is a goal, I would say, from my experience, hasn't been a goal that's gotten a lot of attention over the years, but is coming more into the limelight with Cascadia or landslide hazards. The city is currently looking at doing some more mapping with landslides. Doc Gammy's looked at that, and that could be in conjunction also with whether it's floodplain related and or earthquake related. So a lot of those natural hazards are kind of being reevaluated, I would say. Some of the technology we have today that we didn't have 30 years ago with LIDAR and those types of things have facilitated doing more precise mapping of some of these types of potential hazard areas. One of the things I just quickly want to mention, this goal talks about, some of you may have heard about, with some of the mapping for tsunami zones on the coast, is where facilities are located. So I think it was, I want to say Band, and I might have that wrong, up on the north coast, was looking at a new city hall, I believe, and they were looking to locate that outside of the tsunami zone. I think they built a two-story structure with the roof being kind of an evacuation zone. Another example is down in Curry County in Gold Beach. They were looking to rebuild their hospital, and I think they ended up rebuilding the new hospital in the tsunami zone that caused a lot of uproar about funding and why they would do that, knowing that it could be taken out by a wave and those kind of things. But those discussions are being had and coming more into light, whether it's fire stations or schools and all these types of things.
Weren't there a couple articles recently about flood zones and the inadequacy of the flood mapping?
There's a lot going on right now with flood zone mapping.
Mm-hmm.
There's basically a big lawsuit that happened in Washington, and now it's in the state of Oregon, with FEMA, NIMS, which is the National Marine Fisheries, looking at fish habitat and the floodplains and development in the floodplain and how that impacts salmon habitat primarily in Oregon. So there is a lot of remapping efforts and talk about the floodplains right now. Goal 8 deals with recreational needs. I would say goal 8 here is Willamette Lane would be involved with the recreational needs a lot more than the city themselves. Willamette Lane actually has their own comprehensive plan. It's would look at those needs for our region. And a lot of these goals too, if you read into them, talk a lot about coordination efforts. So that's, I think, a real key component that I'll highlight here on goal 8 is the coordination part of a lot of these goals is critical. So the city coordinating with Willamette Lane as an example, or might even include LTD as a partner in facilitating access to the recreational needs and those types of things. The city of Eugene has the parks department, I think, or division is part of the city themselves. The city of Bend is a little bit like Springfield. They have a separate park district from the city themselves. So different places deal with these in different ways. Here also, Lane County has their park system, and some of that overlaps a little bit with the city of Springfield as well. So goal 9, the next two are two of the ones I wanted to have time to touch on tonight in a little more depth. I think they're two of the bigger ones that we hear a lot about, or in my mind, direct a bit more of our day-to-day work that we're trying to accomplish in some of the comprehensive planning we do at the city. Goal 9 is economic development. And Commissioner Sherwood, you mentioned you looked into goal 9. Do you want to talk about what you found?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do a brief of what I read. So the goal is to provide adequate opportunities throughout the state for a variety of economic activities vital to health, welfare, and prosperity of Oregon citizens. Major considerations that they mention are labor force, market forces, educational programs, health of the economic base, location relative to the markets, availability of land, availability of key public facilities and support facilities, availability and cost of renewable and non-renewable resources, and pollution control requirements. So all those are supposed to be taken into consideration when making a comprehensive plan. Plan components that they specifically outline are the four. So analysis of economic patterns, potentialities, strengths, and deficiencies, and consideration of economic development opportunities, provision of adequate supply of sites for industrial and commercial use, and enforcement of industrial and commercial zoning. And then they have a few outlined key determinants and factors, comparative advantages, natural resources, public facilities and services, existing industries and firms. That one I thought was particularly important, and that was emphasize expansion and increased productivity of existing industries and firms. So what I took away from that is that they're encouraging cities to try to expand on what they already have as opposed to moving into big new things. Also, that goes hand in hand with the idea of comparative advantage. They want cities to utilize what they have in terms of resources and labor forces to continue expanding what they already have, as opposed to once again moving into things that they don't have comparative advantages for. As far as carrying capacity, they don't want cities to overextend themselves. They want cities to consider capacity of our air, land, and water resources when we're diversifying or improving our economy. And the last two things were just implementation issues. They said the plan should consider methods and devices for overcoming certain regional conditions and deficiencies for implementing the goal, including but not limited to tax incentives and disincentives, land use controls and ordinances, preferential assessments, capital improvement programming, and fee and less than fee acquisition techniques. And they also mentioned that there should be an outlined management program, and that those management programs should include how the city is working with non-governmental entities and dividing the work between themselves and those for the planning area. And those organizations should have interest in carrying out this goal.
Great. Any other thoughts or questions? I can talk a little bit more about it. I'm glad you highlighted the economic opportunities. One of the things, so recently with the city's UGB expansion, we did expand for employment lands. As part of that, we were required to do an economic opportunities analysis. It's a pretty in-depth report. It does go into that, you know, expanding existing business types that are here, industry types that are here, but also looking for opportunities as well. And so what fits? I think statewide, one of the challenges with Goal 9 is it doesn't necessarily allow so much for regional analysis of economic opportunities, especially, well, so Portland Metro is a good example, but Eugene Springfield is another example where we're a metro region that are oftentimes kind of fighting for the same jobs or recruiting the same industry or businesses. So if there's collaboration or opportunity for collaboration, I think there could be benefit to that. Some Springfield may have land that say has better highway access or better rail access or something like that, rather than some larger, flatter sites that might be available. Eugene expanded their land by the airport, which is quite a bit further, I-5 compared to where City of Springfield expanded our UGB right next to I-5, but they're proximate to the airport. So how do those dynamics play into it? I'll just mention briefly, in Central Oregon, there was a tri-county large lot industrial analysis done with Jefferson, Crook, and Deschutes County. So that includes all of Madras, Prineville, Redmond, Bend. They were looking to meet a large lot, large industrial lot, need regionally. And so they worked with the state under the goal to establish a regional large lot industrial inventory. And it was unique. It's a way that they found to try and not be so competitive, but work together and figure out what made sense. I wanted to mention too, oftentimes I'll hear about the 20-year planning horizon. So that's true also in this economic realm. We're oftentimes looking out 20 years. That's the planning horizon we use. And a lot of that's based on population projection. And then from the population, we get that now from Portland State University. They do the population projections and the cities use those. And then we extrapolate from there through that EOA, the economic opportunities analysis that I mentioned. We'll take the population expected growth for 20 years and figure out how many jobs that might create and then how much land that translates to, depending on industry type and those types of things. The same 20-year horizon is true whether we're talking about housing and infrastructure and those types of things. And I'll touch on that when we get to Goal 11 related to infrastructure in a few minutes. So Goal 10 is the housing goal. This one, in my mind, is one of the hottest topics in the state and even nationally right now. We have a housing crisis. In Oregon, affordability of housing and locally, whether it's just Springfield or Eugene Springfield. To me, the housing issue is also an economic development issue. Companies trying to recruit employees need to have places for those employees to live or move into. In one of the big projects I'm working on right now for the city is rewriting the development code to try and simplify it and make it more clear and easier to use, but also finding ways of finding tools that might work to allow housing types to be used. that we don't have in our code today, and you may have heard this term before, the missing middle. And really, the missing middle is a housing type. It's, in my mind, when I first heard of it, I instantly thought of middle income. And this goal talks about, and I'll just read the language here, if I can find it. I'm going to jump ahead. So this is the goal language itself. One of the statutes that relates to this housing is for clear and objective standards that we have to use to approve housing. But it talks about in this statute the middle income, middle and fixed income. But so middle income is quite a bit different from what is meant by missing middle housing. So, and we have a report, a City of Springfield report we've prepared on missing middle housing before, but it's really everything between above a single family detached house, but below like a true apartment building. So it's everything in between, whether those are duplexes, fourplexes, cottage housing, courtyard type townhomes, or those types of different development patterns or styles that we may not necessarily have great tools in our code today to work with for developers to develop those types of housing options. I'm going to just read through my notes here. It definitely highlights that this goal 10 housing is serving a variety of income levels. As part of our analysis on whether the city needed to expand our UGB for residential use for housing, the city finally determined that we didn't need to. The inventory of vacant residential land we have in our urban growth boundary was sufficient. Now, a lot of that is based on the policy levels. We talked about the different levels. So what are the policies, how we're going to implement housing? And really, the policy direction is that we're going to try and do more infill and a little bit higher density. So there's always this tug of war about sprawl versus infill density. People don't want sprawl and they don't want density, so how do you do it? People think density sounds really good unless it's happening right next to them, and then they typically don't like it. So how do we do density well is another question I think we need to do through the code update. So compatibility and those types of transitions from neighborhoods and things like that. Make sure, see if there's anything. Is there any questions anybody wants to ask? I think that covers goal 10 in my mind. We got about just over 20 minutes left. So I did want to say one quick more thing about the housing. So recently, and I'll go back, no, it's the same on this slide. This is another statute. There was a recent change in state law. The clear and objective standards that you've probably heard of before, it's kind of a buzzword in planning, we're required to approve housing development under clear and objective standards, which means we can't use discretion. A developer has to be able to come in and know what the rules are, and it has to be clear what they have to do to do housing. The rule or the statute used to be that that was for needed housing. And that was a term defined in state law about in that housing needs analysis that we would have done as part of our UGB expansion or looking whether we need to expand our UGB or not, is what type of housing do we need? And then in theory, there's housing that you could have on top of that need. And that could be, say, some mixed-use development, maybe downtown. People are doing apartments about commercial uses that wasn't identified as a need necessarily. But it's like icing on the cake kind of housing. The state law changed to say these clear and objective standards now need to apply to any housing. So the provision that said needed housing had to be approved under clear and objective standards is now for all housing. So we're all, that's pretty recent, just from last year. The legislature changed that in statute. It wasn't necessarily done really cleanly, as oftentimes is the case with new legislation. So a lot of jurisdictions are still figuring out how to make that work and how it will play out. But I just wanted to point that out, that it is now for all housing, not just housing.
I had a couple of questions regarding the economic development goal 9. Good presentation from Commissioner by the way. And the first one was, I read an article recently about redevelopment in the formerly industrial areas in the north of England. And one of the things that they were doing there was locally acquiring goods so that, for instance, if there were large anchor employers like a hospital, local government, a major employer, school district, they were encouraging them or incentivizing them to seek all their goods that they normally would buy from a rail car that came from China to instead try to source the stuff locally. Is there anything in that goal that would kind of relate to that at all, or would that be missing?
You know, I'd have to dig into it a little bit more to be sure, but to my knowledge, there's not. It doesn't get into that level of regulation.
Yeah, and then the other question was regarding, I call it community resiliency, so that you basically try to buttress all aspects of your community so that it, to an extent, it's sort of self-sufficient and doesn't require as many outside inputs. Is there anything regarding that at all?
Not directly, I don't think. There's a lot of interplay between a lot of goals, and we talked about it's easy to isolate one goal, but when you start talking about multiple goals and how they all interact and the interplay between them, I think some of those conversations start to come up.
Okay.
But yeah, not directly.
Just to respond, I think something worth adding is that the location relative to markets is something mentioned in the goal. Okay. And I think that based on what you're talking about, if I'm understanding it correctly, that developing a city in a way that you best utilize your location to specific markets is important. So I would say possibility of moving away from the rail car model to the model of sourcing locally could potentially relate to that.
So. Okay, thank you.
It's interesting when you look at the state law about forming a new city, and that has happened in Oregon. The city of Lapine was formerly just a community and incorporated as a city, and I think Damascus, I think Portland, and that I think they unincorporated after they couldn't make it work. But some of the law around forming a new city talks about some of the economics of why should you be a city? Can you produce something that generates income?
I don't know if it's appropriate to ask, but I guess, you know, we talked about the need to keep housing affordable for people on low incomes. I don't know if you can answer this, but how do we do that without effectually building what I might call a slum? You know, I mean, if you want more housing, if you want affordable housing, go to a slum. How do we avoid that? Is there an answer?
It's I'm going to just say it like I think about it tonight. It's a tough nut to crack. I'm not sure any jurisdiction has really done it, and that's why we're facing the housing kind of crisis that we have now. There's a lot of moving parts. A lot of people you'll hear talk about it's a simple economics of supply and demand. You just need more vacant land to be able to build more houses, and that'll solve it. Well, infrastructure, and we're getting to goal 11, infrastructure is another huge piece of that. Infrastructure is extremely expensive, and not only for the developer to develop up front, but for the city then to take it on and maintain it over the 20, 50, 100 years kind of thing. Like the street bond is on the ballot, right, for tonight, for Springfield. How do we maintain the streets that we have in Springfield today? So I'm not sure there is an easy answer. We don't regulate necessarily like aesthetics of housing. Some communities do. I think just one that pops to my mind is Lake Oswego in the Portland area. They pretty heavily regulate the aesthetics of even just single family homes, what they want them to look like, and do a pretty intensive review. So I don't know, you know, what density looks like and how we do that well is, I think we can learn some lessons from the past, but it's kind of like regulating for the to avoid the worst possible outcome, but not trying to regulate it to be gold-plated housing at the same time.
True. Thank you.
Oh, sorry, Tim, I didn't see
you. I was just going to comment on your question.
Please.
That affordable housing doesn't necessarily have to be slum housing. It can be regular housing. And the key to making it work for low-income people is subsidies to help them with the expense of the rent or mortgage payments or whatever. So that basically the housing is no different than any other low-density housing. It's just that the low-income residents are being subsidized.
And in my mind, there's even affordable housing isn't necessarily subsidized housing. Those are two different things entirely. Affordable is for everybody. You know, it's all, like the goal talks about middle income. You know, there's teachers and police officers that have a tough time earning enough money to pay for housing and just because of the price of housing.
It's really the main factor in the appearance of housing is how do the residents treat the property?
True. And I don't.
Yeah, because you can have houses that look like slum houses in the middle of a middle income neighborhood because they're not taking care of the property. So that's more of an element than anything else.
Speaking of elections, there's at least two measures for housing. There's one large one in Portland, and then there's of course Measure 102 statewide.
So we have only about 15 minutes left. I'd like to try and get through the rest of this.
The quick question I have for you is just about housing itself versus buildable lands. I just wanted to get a quick idea on in this goal, how do those compare? Because I know that there are a lot of rules around a city having enough buildable lands, but does that translate into having enough housing itself?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I'll have an exact answer for you. I think when we think about it, so when we recently evaluated that, we did a housing needs analysis, you base it off the land inventory that's available. So you're not talking about actually production of the units themselves, but the opportunity to produce the units.
Understood.
We can't force somebody to develop the land to build houses or apartments or whatever type of housing it might be, unless we're actively going and buying land and partnering with people to do it. I mean, if somebody owns a vacant piece of land and you could build 30 houses on it, but they just want to live there and do that alone and don't want to build houses, that's what they're going to do. So that say it's a 10-acre piece might be in our vacant lands or redevelopable inventory, but when it becomes actually available to build on and those units are produced is anybody's guess. And again, we're talking about a 20-year supply. The other piece to think about is, so at in that point of time, I forget, was it 2009 that we did our housing needs analysis, that we said, okay, we have a 20-year supply. And it might have been a little more, I'm not exactly sure what the number came up to be, but as housing happens and developments eat up that inventory, then at what point does that trigger, okay, we need to reevaluate if some of that 20-year inventory is gone now? And it, you know, it's very work intensive and costly to do these types of analyses. To continually go through it, it is very challenging to maintain that 20-year supply.
Thank you.
So I'm going to skip over a couple of these slides that were more about housing. Just quickly on goal 11 is the public facilities and services. This basically covers water, sanitary sewer, storm sewer, and transportation. The next goal is goal 12. It's specific to transportation as well. But this is another one of those goals that, especially here with Springfield, that I mentioned coordination earlier. I think coordination is key. So MWMC, water manager for our region, sewer provider, sub, supplies water and electric for Springfield. The city does the stormwater. So you can see already right there, and then we start talking about transportation. We have a highway that runs through Springfield, so we're coordinating with ODOT. Lane County still has jurisdictions on lots of our roads that are within the Springfield UGB. So that coordination element with, under goal 11 is critical in my mind. It also does refer to a couple other types of facilities that you might not always think about. Police protection, health services, we talked about recreation a little bit earlier, energy and communication services. communication's becoming more and more of a topic with some of the cell technology that's being talked about now. But all of those infrastructure components that take a city to the city. Transportation, we could easily talk for an hour or longer on transportation. The rule itself is pretty short. There's what's called the Transportation Planning Rule, the TPR. It's multiple pages long. I have, you know, documents that we dig in the weeds on. I've done a lot of work with the TPR in the past. It's changed over time. They modify it, try and make it work. A lot of it's focused around the statewide system of transportation. But I'm going to, unless you have more questions on Goal 12, I'm actually going to kind of skip over. I want to give Commissioner Lamon time to go over his Goal 15 presentation that he had. Goal 13 is another one we don't touch on too often, energy conservation. I envision this coming up a little bit with the code update project we're going to be working on, with, again, doing density correctly and access to light, higher density type of development, those types of things. So we may talk more about Goal 13 in the upcoming years. Goal 14 is a big one. It relates a lot to the urban growth boundary stuff that I've been talking about tonight. It has to do with the 20-year supplies. And I'm just going to jump back for a second. The one thing I did want to say on Goal 11, the infrastructure, I know that some jurisdictions have really struggled with the 20-year planning horizon for infrastructure. Because if you're going to be digging trenches in the ground and putting pipes in the ground for water or sewer or whatever it might be, that's not a 20-year facility. You're putting a pipe in the ground for 50, 75, 100 years. And the idea is that you only size that pipe for the 20-year growth. Well, if you have to, in another 20 years, dig the trench again and put in another pipe or a bigger pipe, I know there's some discussion around how can we anticipate maybe 50 years of growth. So when we actually do put that pipe in the ground, we don't have to dig it up or replace it later to facilitate longer growth. Like we just did in the Glenwood Corridor, that's a beautiful facility now. It'd be a shame to have to dig it up in 15 years and upsize the pipe or something like that. So Goal 14, again, urbanization. It's kind of a pretty big, broad goal that combines usually with some of the other goals. And now I'm going to let Commissioner Landon do his Goal 15 presentation. I'll just show a quick map I had. So the Goal 15 is the Willamette River Greenway. And I had put this map in this green area here through Springfield. This is Glenwood. So this is downtown where we're at now. This is the map greenway in Springfield. So really from I-5 down, this is some of the surface mine and the river down here. That's pretty much the impacted area in Springfield of the Willamette River Greenway. So the arrow forward is going to forward your slide when I get them pulled up here. So here's your map.
And so as he mentioned, this was the last one done. It was done about a year after the others were done. Pretty much whatever was legal as of the 6th of December 1975 became baseline for this thing. There's also, as you can see, some other statutes that apply to this thing. The preliminary Greenway Plan has a couple of different names. The Willamette Greenway Plan, River Greenway Program. This was the predecessor to Goal 15, and that was done back in 1967. Some of you may remember the Willamette River used to be a cesspool, and in 67 they began working on that, and Goal 15 was the formalization, and when that became law. It's cooperative, sort of state, local, government area. It includes the river. It also includes adjacent lands. If you hear the term riparian, you have the river, you have the land. Riparian is that area between the river and the land that is affected by water flow and things like that, things that are going to affect the river. So, let's see. Affected lands, it's quite broad. You can see the list there, agricultural, excavation, public recreation, historical, archaeological, natural scenic resources, nearby vegetative cover, which means, you know, farms, fish, wildlife habitat, timber, and it continues. It's broader, and actually, I appreciate you showing that map, because you can see that it's more than just the rivers, it's more than just the banks, it's where this thing could flood, where we have annual floodplains, where we have areas that tend to fill up. One of the things that's also in here are potential areas near the river where the state's looking for ways to acquire land, either through donation or through purchase or living wills, things like that. Let's see. Kind of more expansion on some of the areas, floodplains, farms, open space areas. And let's see. Additional areas that are affected. And the last one. One of the things they talk about are both, you know, if you're dealing with an existing property, if you have a property on the river, let's suppose you decide you want to redo it. You actually can, and it's not affected by this plan. What becomes affected is if you're going to change the intensification. If I'm going to add more bodies, more cars, more things like that, now it becomes subject to Goal 15. If all I'm doing is remodeling and just make it look a little bit better, but I'm not going to affect anything, population density, intensification, it doesn't become subject to that. So these are things that are going to change the environment that we care about. And that's it. Questions?
I think that's a good point you highlight, is Goal 15 is not directly applicable to development. So it's when and if we were to amend our comprehensive plan or expand our urban growth boundaries or include more area that's covered by the land, that's when that goal needs to be taken into consideration.
Not too long in the past, FEMA has weighed in on the subject of floodplains, etc. How is that impacting the goal on the Greenway?
Well, yeah, I would say the floodway issue isn't directly impacting the Willamette River Greenway goal at this point. It's kind of separate. A lot of the Willamette River Greenway has to do with aesthetics and the scenic values of the corridor. Not so much necessarily the habitat piece, but not to say it won't in the future or couldn't affect other goals as well. And you'll see that, and as you mentioned, the width varies dramatically depending on where you're at in the corridor and that type of stuff. So it's not a fixed, just multi or single dimension corridor. My last slide was just a quick slide of the four coastal goals, goals 16 through 19. They're not applicable to the city of Springfield. I wasn't going to go into them, but that's all I have tonight for you, and pretty close to out of time. But any other questions?
I'll have one. Considering the length of time that these goals have been in place, have they been frequently updated or modified, and the language changed in any significant way during the course of time?
I would say many of them have. There are definitely some that really, for the most part, haven't been touched. But some of the ones I mentioned are kind of more used regularly. Goal 10 for housing is definitely one that has been. Goal 9, that economic goal, has been modified. In this book, I think it maybe some of them can give you some dates about when modifications have happened. Actually, I'm looking, it doesn't look like it has. But if you look at the rules and statutes, it talks about when modifications have happened. You know, a handful or more years ago now, they did the big look. I don't know if any of you remember hearing about it's kind of the big look of the statewide planning program. The idea was to see how we could revamp it and modernize it. Nothing ever really came of it. A lot of people are frustrated by the fact that nothing ever came of it. There's still talk about, you know, how to keep this planning program relevant for today. And does work need to be done? So but many of them have been changed and modified.
So what does the city do in response when the buildable lands inventory is too low, besides expanding the urban growth boundary?
So one, you know, just off the top of my head, is you upzone, you increase density, is really the easy alternative to expanding the UGB, is increase density.
So just make more of the low density spots high density?
Potentially, yeah. So mixed use development is one way. You look at some of your commercial lands, and a lot of this stuff we'll be talking about with the code, development code update, and also the Main Street corridor that's going to be talked about. What do you do with Main Street? It's primarily a commercial corridor, but how do you better utilize that corridor? So do you raise the heights right along Main Street and say, okay, now you can do commercial with two or three floors of residential on top? So you're actually meeting your part of your housing need in what was formerly commercial zones, those types of concepts.
So community commercial?
That's one of the zones we call it now.
Okay.
There's different commercial zones, but so within those zones, you say, okay, now mixed use is allowed, or we increase the height limit and allow residential uses, those types of things.
Okay, thank you.
Probably time for one more.
Is Springfield doing a lot of that? I've seen an awful, awful lot of that in Eugene.
We are. Yeah, I mentioned the Main Street Corridor project right now is getting kicked off, and I think part of that project, the natural discussion around some of that will be what does that corridor look like over the next, again, probably 20 years will be the planning horizon. And with the development code update, we're definitely going to be taking a look at ways to implement the policies that the city council adopted for the urban growth boundary, establishing our own and for the 20-year supply housing. And so in implementing those policies, now updating our zoning development code to look at ways of realizing those policies. So yeah, we're doing quite a bit of work on that.
Well, I think we're probably, despite what I'm saying,
thank you very much. Thanks everybody for their work on it. You're part of it.